Okay, this is the first place I'm sharing about what I've been quietly working on. It's called the Mental Fitness Blueprint. It's a 90-day, deeply personal map for training your mind to work for you, not against you. And I'm opening this up to just 50 founding members. So if this podcast has ever helped you slow down or see yourself more clearly, this is your invitation. Details are in the show notes or at mchampagne.com. Anna, who are you?
Who am I? Soul, having a human experience. Born in the north of Sweden, definitely a bit of a tech nerd. Moved into more of wellness tech. Also, I guess, a personal development, spiritual nerd. Kind of a nerd in general. Believe in humanity. A lot of love for things in general. Care about, the world and human evolution.
I love it.
And music.
I love it. I have to ask about how you, a bit of your upbringing in northern Sweden and as a kid and so forth, because you have a very interesting mix of education and passion that doesn't always, I don't always see these links. Like, you know, there's a lot of education around, of course, philosophy and physics and so forth, but then also there's IT and engineering. Like, usually they don't always go together. So what was it like kind of growing up? Like, where is this coming from, I guess, is the question I really want to ask.
Yeah, I think the early years were more characterized by sort of math, physics, and then the arts, music and art. Those were my top degrees and where I excelled. And I actually was quite uninterested in a lot of the theoretical subjects, although I performed well at school, but I didn't feel like, for example, that the subject history actually answered my fundamental questions, which were always very systematic. Like, okay, how did we end up with this type of leadership? How did we end up with, you know, how did we end up here? And the, you know, a subject that's talking about various battles and kings and whatnot was kind of uninteresting to me. So it's definitely later. And I think also because there's been a lot of fantastic books written recently that actually look at the bigger picture, like how did we end up here? And so that interest has come later. And now I'm also very fascinated about systems such as society and humanity and like systems in general. But that started much more of a sort of technology system, IT system level. And yeah, my degree is definitely very nerdy.
I love it. Well, I remember you telling me when we first met, I wrote it down, and I'm paraphrasing, but it was something like, you said, I could see that my code was off, but I knew I could fix the code. I mean, I don't think I've ever heard anyone speak like that. I love it. So can you, what's the context around that and maybe, you know, fill in some of the gaps?
Yeah. So I've definitely always had pattern recognition, and that's why I've pretty much my whole career I've been in very early in exponential trends in technology. And I've also seen those trends in myself and around me, and sometimes been very surprised that other people can't see it in themselves or in general, but understanding that that's kind of how my brain works. And so if I see saw a pattern in myself, I thought of that very much as, well, I have bugs in my code. This is me. Like, anything that happens to me frequently that doesn't happen as frequently to other people has something to do with me. And then I found various ways. That's kind of how I started on my personal growth path, which is like, if there are people that are doing better at life, then I can do better at life. I can figure out like how I do better at being me. Mm. And I think that's the most relevant pursuit can take. And so I think like I am definitely, I've done a lot on this sort of personal development, spiritual path, but it's been out of real curiosity. Like, you know, if I have an inconvenient pattern, I don't want to have that for the rest of my life. That would be a waste of time. So I think the sort of software analogy worked well for me early days. And that's probably what we were talking about with that quote.
Yeah. Who do you think, I mean, who were your earlier influences that kind of programmed some of that early curiosity that obviously still runs through your program, let's say, to present day?
Yeah. I mean, there are always like breadcrumbs. And sometimes you remember like, who, it was some librarian that gave me one book. Like, who is this genius librarian that somehow like in middle school knew that this might be good for me. So like names I can't recall, but you know, there's certain influences, and probably someone I've never recognized, but there was an older friend, was just a few years older than me, called Lenita Hedquist.
Okay.
And she opened a whole bunch of doors of like how to think about life when I was just a few years younger than her. Then interestingly, and you're going to laugh at me again, and this is going to be an embarrassing podcast.
But, not at all. Come
on. I was in college, I could, because I have a lot of energy, and I really saw the pattern of everything going my way and then nothing going my way. So it's like a little volatile. And being an engineer, I'm like, I have an energy problem. So I literally like kind of looked up what to do, and I found Qigong. So Qigong is ancient Chinese traditional balancing energy. And I learned Qigong, and it's helped me enormously. So, and then...
What is the practice though? Just so I've heard of it, but I don't actually know what does that entail?
Yeah, so you have what's mainly centered around three centers. So the sort of Dantian, belly center, heart center, and head. And that you will have too much energy in one of the centers. So for example, if you have too much head energy, if you go balanced heart and head, but no belly energy, you don't get anything done because you don't have the energy. If you have a lot of a belly and a lot of heart, but no head, you do a lot of things and it's all coming out of love, but it's very incoherent and maybe not so effective. Yeah. So it's about kind of balancing the energies, and you work in different movement practices that are kind of a little bit similar. I mean, it's the same family of Tai Chi, but it's different. And then there are different schools of Qigong. But you actually learn, and I got to a point where I could really feel the energies and move energy around my body. And you have different circuits that you can move the energy around your body. And it was just extremely helpful for me in my 20s. And, you know, then you can move into their branches of martial arts and branches of healing. And, you know, I never got that far. I was just using it for myself. Yeah.
But that's power. I mean, it's so interesting the way this stuff happens. Like literally this morning over here, I was chatting with a couple people that are organizing a tech conference, and they're early stage founders working in, for the most part, health and just kind of advanced tech, I guess you can say, here in Canada. And we were speaking about a topic around like, how do we discuss kind of the next, I hate to use the word competitive advantage, but for now I'll use that. Like, it's almost like a competitive advantage of tapping into this heightened sense of consciousness or another level of consciousness and like energy and so forth. But like, it's like, how do you have that conversation without people kind of writing you off that this is too woo-woo, right? Even though like all of this stuff has literally been around since the beginning of time. And like, you're using a perfect example of managing your energy. It was so effective for you. I mean, it's a wicked competitive advantage. Have you found any, I guess, secrets or kind of secret sauce in having these conversations, especially in the business world?
I mean, it's changed enormously throughout my 20 years kind of in business.
Yeah.
I was an early meditator, and that was something that, like, it's not that long ago. I'm not that old. Yeah. You can really talk about that. And now it's just totally normal to talk about meditation in the workplace. So I think it's changing rapidly. Yeah. That's one part. And I have these conversations with a lot of different people. And I find that there is something in every human that has a curiosity about how to expand as a human. So I think it's just based on communication in general, meeting a person where they're at. And I think maybe one of the gifts that because I've lived in 5-6 different countries and learned different languages, and, you know, a positive side of that is the ability to kind of adjust my communication. And I find that if you dare to open the conversation and be vulnerable and like share versus like the worst is like going in with advice, like you should meditate.
Yeah.
More like, oh, I had these issues and this is what I learned. And then, you know, I very often find that there is an innate curiosity and drive to learn and want to know more about these topics.
That's a good reminder. Yeah. I think always you really can't lose when you go down the approach of like, this is what, here was the challenge and here's what's worked for me. Right. And just going through from the perspective of sharing. I love that. I think one of the other, like on everything that we're discussing, I mean, and this is directly involved in a lot of the work that you do, but I know I'm biased because I do spend a lot of time in the mental fitness space, but I think if any of us, or all of us, I should say, can better communicate and teach our nervous system to work for us instead of against us, everything that we're talking about is more accessible and just easier, I guess you can say. So I guess, like, when did that whole topic really enter your life?
I mean, it's like, Qigong does that, but it wasn't in a conscious way that I was like using the word nervous system.
Yeah.
Obviously with Sensate, where what I'm doing now, that we talk about it every day.
Yeah.
Also from a company culture perspective, like, it would be nonsense if we didn't, you know, bring that into the workplace, which we do. We can talk about the challenges of that and being a startup or early stage company. So I think, you know, I also got in touch with yoga quite early and been on and off doing that. I didn't properly learn meditation until 2012.
Okay. What does that look like for you?
I jumped straight in and did a 10-day Vipassana meditation in India. Yeah, very much typical Anna way of doing things. And it was definitely life-changing. I think doing that length of silent, like, meditation and being in silence, it felt like, you know, you have all the small incremental changes that probably are the most life-changing, I would say. But then you have, like again, software analogy, like the .0 releases, which is like a major shift and a major upgrade. And I do find that you get that opportunity when you go on deeper retreats. Yeah. And really, you know, it was noticeable afterwards. Yeah. People didn't know where I'd been, but people could notice that something had shifted. And I felt like it was like a hard drive defragmentation and like a major software upgrade. Then, you know, I still meditate, but I don't do the like hour a day in the morning and hour a day in the evening, which I'm sure would do me good, but I do still have a meditation practice. So it's been kind of various things that have crept in. And I think I had some health issues between sort of 2012 and 2016. And that's when I started to become really cognizant and aware of my nervous system. And the nervous system started talking to me. So I actually had started to develop like an internal sense of what was going on in my nervous system, including noticing dehydration, lack of potassium. Like,
oh, wow. You gotta
seem aware now. So, yeah. So, and then sort of my nervous system health has become important. And I think I kind of probably have quite a sensitive nervous system. And so that creates extra awareness.
Yeah.
That can be a great tool, but also something that I therefore need to manage and need to make sure that I look after. So it's great to have a product that I'm working with that I can use as well as other tools.
So what was going on during that time in your life that was some of the causes? As I'm sure there's some, you know, signs that people listening as well can pay attention to and maybe, you know, draw a bit of attention. Yeah,
no, happy to share. I think what happened was that I did have a lot of stress in 2012, both in my personal life and at work, like really piling up. And there are different dimensions. You can say that stress maybe activated gluten allergy gene or something like that, you know, that might have happened. And that started to break down my gut and my health. On a like more like spiritual level, I think having worked at that point for a number of years already in the tech industry, I was very out of balance in my masculine and feminine energy. And so from otherwise being quite balanced, I realized that my actually creativity and the ability to, because the sort of interconnected feminine side, understanding more interconnected complex system instead of linear. And I think that a lot of the reasons I often got hired was because of those skills. But when I got into the workplace, they weren't welcome in the room. So I really filtered myself enormously. I like on a deeper level, I feel like that was also like I was energetically out of balance and also like seeking the outlet for that by like swinging off a chandelier on the weekend type of thing in my younger years.
Okay.
So I just sort of, so there are many different dimensions to it, but ultimately I started to break down my health and in a downward spiral. So, and my doctor, normal doctor, didn't identify anything and I got worse and they said, you're fine. And I'm like, I am clearly not fine.
Yeah.
So then went to a whole bunch of specialists, very typical health journey, and ended up finding an incredible functional medicine doctor in Luxembourg, Dr. Mouton, and got my life back in 3 months.
Wow.
So super grateful after several years. Actually, that wasn't until 2016.
Yeah. Do you mind sharing some of the things that you're doing to kind of get back on track for those 3 months?
Yeah. So, I mean, because the system had got so out of balance, and I think that's the thing with functional medicine, is to understand the functions of the body. So he could actually see on all the tests that he'd done that I was eating right, I was doing all the right things, but I wasn't metabolizing it because, you know, my gut had broken down and therefore I hadn't taken up certain nutrients. So I was lacking building blocks and proteins for certain converters of certain hormones. You see what I mean? It's just like, it's you know, just the level. And it was the first time I realized, the first time I came in contact with functional medicine and realized that we actually even have that level of knowledge about the body on the planet, you know, so much more than anything I've ever heard from any of my normal doctors. So deeply grateful for that. And none of my doctors had even identified the root cause, never mind a side effect, a single side effect. So all identified, all clarified. And then I was put on the first 3 months was quite a strict program. But what I appreciated about him as well was that he actually just printed out this massive sheet of things I could eat. It changed so much. I have PTSD from all the different diets I did beforehand to kind of try to deal with my health. And he wasn't only focused on it was certain things. He's like, absolutely under no circumstances. And then it was very high potency supplements, very specific, and it's so difficult to understand how are they even derived, you know, I would never know, you know, without that guidance. And yeah, it was incredible. And I would say, like, I got 85% of my health back in 3 months. I was blown away after obviously like gone in the opposite direction for a few years. But then I think that the last few, and then another 5% in the other 3 months, but then it was kind of a mental for the last 10%. Like I had to accept to change my lifestyle. I had to really land in my body. I was living in London at the time, a little bit of the kind of work hard, play hard culture, and not like the level of consciousness that this has all given me. And so it wasn't until I'm like, okay, I'm not getting that lifestyle back. I'm not going to go back. This is a new chapter in my life where I'm much more in tune with my body. And I just live in a different way and have much more consciousness in everything I do. And it's really shifted a lot for me. So I'm very grateful for it in hindsight, but that was like the last part of healing.
Yeah. So how does that show up for you now? Like you're in a fast-paced startup kind of environment, CEO of Sensate. I mean, you're raising capital. Like these are all the things that we hear are intense, fast. Like, so I guess having gone through that experience, what works for you present day, or what are some of the things that you're watching for to make sure that, you know, your nervous system stays regulated in some capacity?
And it's tough. It's a paradox to run a company that creates relaxation all over the world and on you know, working.
It's almost harder, I find. I mean, I used to run a journaling company, and it's like you're in all of these practices, then you're way more self-aware. And it's like, well, I definitely should be doing these things, right? But I almost find it harder at times. Yeah, sorry to cut you off. Keep going.
Yeah, no, 100%. I totally agree with you. So I guess for me, an important choice was reframing. Like, actually, I really like the framework of Kabbalah. And one of the aspects there has got to do with the challenges are here to help us grow. And so the sort of torture of seeing challenges that come in front of us as punishment, or I'm not doing things right, or I'm not manifesting, that's like self-torture. And so instead, with a metaphor of a loving parent would never want their kid to just lie on the sofa and eat candy. That is not, and we call it, that's when you're in flow state. No, like that's maybe once a week a good thing to do. But of course you want to challenge your beloved child to learn and to learn sports. And we put them out on, you know, through a lot of things that are kind of stressful to grow, right?
Yeah.
And so that our higher self or whatever we believe in will do that to us as well. So challenges, and, you know, in the end, you know, there's nothing that can be proven, but we can choose to believe something that is genuinely meaningful and helpful. And so I find the framework of that, like, okay, great, challenge, amazing. How can I grow from this? And to welcome them as that loving force that just wants me to grow and be a better version of myself. And from a work perspective, yes, I want to be a better CEO every day. I want to be a better team player every day. And And so to see every challenge as an opportunity to grow as a soul is very different to seeing every challenge as a penalty or something, a punishment. So I think that's been part of it. And also the choice to double down on that. There are certain things that I don't compromise. I don't compromise my sleep. I find that culture is so counterproductive. It's more than proven. Yeah. That cutting on your sleep undermines your productivity and especially your like chief executive functions.
Yeah, everything. So yeah, totally.
Your ability to think strategically, problem solve, like all of those things are like substantially undermined by shortage of sleep. And also I just enjoy work less. Like I'm a little bit tired today and I'm good because it's just like one day. But if I go several days with not enough sleep, I also like I have empathy with myself. I'm like, oh, it's okay. You didn't sleep enough. That's why you're not feeling good. But, you know, it's not as fun. And then I do sensei sessions. Yeah. It's my absolute afternoon hack. Instead of going for, you know, coffee or piece of chocolate or something to do a sensei session. And I really notice that I have more focus working long days, which is not the use case. I do meditate. I do breath work. So I have a whole range of practices and I do have to be careful. I mean, I have been near burnout twice. I definitely feel like I'm a very different person and I'm very grateful for every past version of myself for persisting in my pursuit to be a better human.
Of course.
But yeah, you know, nothing for granted. We all have limits, you know, so constant journey.
We have to dive in and frankly, all of those. But first question is just, is there... what's the practice that works best for you to essentially check in with yourself? Because the first part of how you answered that, to me, takes some self-awareness and just some data to see, I guess, borrow some of your language, like, okay, something might be off in the code here. But normally we have to stop and whether it's journaling or something else, but what's that for you?
So partly I think I have a pattern something view. It's just something that I just see patterns and behaviors, if it's on a social, economic, whatever level, and I see it in myself. So partly I think I kind of just see the world in that way.
Interesting.
And then I typically really need to stop when I've tangled myself up in that, which happens. And then it's a level of how much I tangled myself up in myself. So there are a few, like sitting down and meditating is extremely efficient for me. With practice, you drop in faster and faster and really connect with something that's very solid. So that's very helpful.
When you do it for you, what's your meditation practice look like? And when do you do it typically?
Yeah. You know, I am definitely this kind of take a little bit of wisdom from everything. So I have the Vipassana meditation. I have both meditations it's obviously the one where you just practice the stillness and the observation. Then there's practices where you focus on various things, practices when you actually manifest or visualize things. So if my mind is very active, I tend to do more like a Vipassana meditation or something. And just what that is for people that haven't heard of it, it's more to observe in a lot of detail different parts of your body. So become very aware of subtle sensations throughout the body. So that gives something for a very active mind to do. And so it depends. I can also, more if it is something that I've lost connection with in terms of a vision, sit down and visualize. But in terms of connecting with myself, I really like to just zone in and just be my own center. Like that is such an amazing feeling. And it took me years to get there. And just like, it's almost just sitting and just dropping into what I truly am, which is kind of not a word.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, what is that? But I mean, before even saying that, I'm like, you probably can't really describe that. But is that more of, does that come to you kind of like eyes closed? And once you can kind of still the mind a little bit, and then it just, you drop into that feeling, or is it something else?
Yeah, I typically, so that's where, like, I will notice where I'm at, what type of meditation. I do have guided meditations that I will do. And if I meditate with my partner, him and I will often do guided meditations. But on my own, it's a little bit like checking in where I'm at. So I will typically start by just settling in my body, scanning through my body, and then kind of settling my mind as much as possible, and then tapping into that center.
Yeah. Amazing. And then you mentioned journaling. What does that look like for you? Do you have any standard reflective questions that are helpful for you?
That, I would actually not mind deepening a little bit on that side. Journaling has been super helpful for me. And I learned in 2008 automatic journaling. And that was life-changing because I didn't really have much access to my subconscious. But this aspect of just writing and just making the hand continue and just like giving up what it's going to write, like just write whatever you want. And the fact that the hand is kind of connected to the subconscious and he's writing stuff that I'm like, what?
It's wild, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy. So that was very fascinating. And I still use that tool. Then I've been doing all sorts of different programs.
Okay.
I mean, like retreats and techniques and trainings and whatnot. So I've done tons of different, you know, journal prompts. But yeah, no, I think I'm ready to go a little deeper with some type of journaling. So maybe you and I will have an extra conversation about that, or you can give me some tips.
For sure.
Right now.
For sure. No, for sure. I mean, I can definitely drop a few prompts. That's my game. But I would say the one question to ask or something to try, especially in that kind of like free writing style or the automatic that you mentioned, have you ever tried doing that after some breath work or meditation and then dropping into the page? It's a whole other level and it just flows out. Have you tried that in that sequence?
Yeah. Okay. I also do quite a lot of breath work and some breath work, like the alchemy breath work.
I do ask you about that.
Completely shifts how my mind works. And if I am like level 3 out of 3 entangled and can't see my way out of something, that will sort it. I will do an half an hour or an hour of that breath work. And ironically, afterwards, I think it shifts somehow the connection between the brain half or something, because I'm slightly dyslexic afterwards. I mean, I'm not dyslexic at all. So I noticed that my writing is not as good and I misspell and like, but my clarity and vision and understanding how everything hangs together and just seeing a solution is right there. So like it has a positive and a negative impact on my writing.
Yeah.
But the journaling is like the other part of the automatic is like, no one will ever read this. That because letting go of the ego for that writing, otherwise it doesn't work. If a small part of my mind will think someone's going to ever read this, it blocks. So just like promising this, no one's ever going to read this, we'll burn this later. Then it's just like much easier to get the flow.
Yeah.
Well, that type of writing.
Well, I find even that I'll notice myself kind of just actually purposely not write clearly. And then like even I can't reread it, but it's just you're still getting the thoughts out of the mind. And to your point, then you don't have to worry about anyone reading that or so forth. It's so powerful. I have to ask you then, what is, because I did want to ask you about alchemy breathwork. Like what is that? Because you're trained in that as well, right?
Yeah. So that's another shout out, Anthony Abagnano. He's like an amazing human being, a really amazing human being. And so alchemy breathwork is a type of conscious connected breath. It's done with music. But I think what I like about him and also his training is that it's actually really deep work. And the training is like a year. And you have to both do tons of it yourself. And we get to learn because people can have cathartic experiences. And I don't think, you know, it's very easy because it's not like regulated that you can just say, oh, I'm a breathwork practitioner because you've seen someone else doing it. But you're not able to hold space for what might happen. And some cases are challenging. So we get to do tons of sessions for ourselves, on each other, group sessions where he's around and assisting. We also get to learn a lot about nervous system and all of that. So it's just like, I did it for myself. And it's a tool that has been like such a gift in my life. I didn't do it actually with an intention to become a practitioner. I do occasionally do one-on-one sessions because it is one of the deepest meditations I can do. Because I have to be so in my energetic space, holding space for another human being, that I am fully just almost like consciousness. Like it's very profound to me, but it also takes a lot out of me. So I don't do them very frequently and I'm really busy. But I also like occasionally like to gift or do such a session for someone and it goes very deep. So yeah, that's the practice.
Well, what's it like though? Like it's obviously pretty, you know, extensive given it's a year's worth of training, but like just for people, just to get an idea of like how is the breathwork different, or like how's what's the style?
Yeah, no, it is. So sorry, like, yeah, the conscious connected breathwork is, you know, a full breathing in and then just letting go on the out. But it's like a circle. There is no pause on the out breath, on the in breath you typically have. So you do charge the nervous system, but you do need to charge it in a very grounded, conscious way. So when you facilitate, it's very common to see people going into and like it's kind of just chest breathing, or and then, you know, you need to manipulate and help them get into the full kind of torso breathing or the full breathing. And also that's where this kind of presence come in, which is a big part of the training, where your hands just go where they need to go, and having that confidence that your body is communicating. And it is fascinating because somehow their body will tell your body what to do, and you cannot have your mind involved, because then you notice, like, if you're in that space, it all flows. There's no surprises for people having their hand, their eyes closed.
Yeah,
they will often also feel that your hands are in many places, like that you're holding maybe their head and you're not. So it's very fascinating how that works. That's also part of the training. It is one of these things that was really, it broke my rational mind. Like I went to the first session with Anthony. He was visiting the UK, and I went there after work, and it was just like, oh, why did I sign up to do this? I'm busy. And this friendly man is telling me that all these crazy things might happen, that I'm like, I'm going to lie on the floor and breathe. Like, I'm not going to be crying or screaming or shaking or any of those things. Like, what is this guy talking about?
Yeah.
But I'm also this person. I'm not going to waste my time. Yeah. I'm going to execute this perfectly.
Yeah.
So I learned a technique and off I go. And things start to happen in my body. Or like old injuries started to heat up like crazy. Tears started to pour out my eyes. My face started to shake. But I'm like, he said, continue to do it. I'm going to continue to do it. It was a crazy show. Like I have never felt like, I don't have a lot of visual. I literally had like, you know, just massive lotus flower coming out of my chest. It was like the craziest thing ever.
Wow.
Afterwards, I genuinely thought he drugged me, jokingly, but I was blown away. And afterwards it was like time stood still. Like I could see the molecules in the air. I was like absolutely blown away. And so my rational mind went, what the is this? And so therefore I had to learn it.
Yeah.
And trained with him, and I'm so glad I did. It's been a massive gift, but it's also a little bit beyond what my rational mind is happy with.
I just love your personality. And like I said at the top of the show, like you just have such a unique background of like, you've got that rational mind. I think we can see it and feel it. And like, there's the business aspect and the CEO, and it's the engineer, I think, and you, but then there's this whole other side, like with the breath work and the meditation and the journal. Like it's, I love it. I think it's beautiful. How do you feel about like that mix? Does it feel good for you? Or are you at odds with yourself? Or?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
So, well, I mean, first you don't know what it is to be anyone else, right? You've just ever been you.
Yeah.
So people are like, well, what is it like to be you? I'm like, what is it like to be you? I mean, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I do sense that I have definitely been given a sort of quite diverse internal family system, very eccentric bunch that I deal with. And so, yeah, that's non-trivial. And the integration is ongoing. I think I was separate parts when I was younger. I was one person at work. I was another person on the weekend, another person at a retreat. And I feel very grateful that this particular company, Sense8, is allowing me to bring a lot of that together.
Yeah.
So, and also in my relationship, and, you know, so it's much more integration. But then it's also just a recognizing, like, yeah, there are these different parts of me that have their needs, and just kind of acknowledging them. And some tend to be like the CEO tend to be quite dominant. So like, how do I give space for some of the more like, I want to dance parts of me. And yeah, but again, like, I don't know what it's like to be you. You're also a very interesting person.
Sure. Sure. Okay. I mean, let's get into, I want to make sure I have enough time to talk about Sense8 and what it's all about. And just like this sonic resonance, like first of all, what is Sense8? And then let's jump into, you know, what we can expect from a product like that. And I think, why do we need something like this now more than ever? I mean, I'm a huge fan, and obviously I'm biased, but I think physical objects are really important in today's world of just hyper tech and speed and this. Like, we've got to slow down a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I have also been part of early technology trends that kind of have had both positive and negative impacts very early in mobile, very early in social media tech. So I'm very aware of that impact. Tech is just an amplifier. It's just a tool. So it can change the world for good. It can change the world for bad, whatnot. So Sensei, first of all, it's a little hardware device that you place on the sternum. You can use a lanyard or just lie down and place it there. You use your own headphones. You start a session in the app. Yeah, sessions are between 10 and 30 minutes. You will actually hear sound therapy through the ears, and you will physically feel the infrasonic frequencies in the chest area. And so this part of the body is built as a resonance field. Sonic waves travel through tissue. And we have for thousands of years used this in the form of umming and humming. And if we learn to get vibration into the center of the chest, which feels very different, we can activate the vagus nerve. So there are a lot of positive side effects as well with this tech, and it's that it brings us into this part of our body in a somatic way. So I'm not a massive proponent of AR/VR for mental health. I think it's great for trainings and phobias and all of that, but we're actually visually overstimulated, and we need to not come out of our bodies, but really come in and feel. So eyes closed in general, and also in all ancient practices like meditation. Yeah. 99% is like with eyes closed. There's obviously walking meditation as well. But so that's how it works. And I think that I've been blown away by how well this works for people. And that's the only reason I'm doing it. It's my co-founder, Stefan Kmelik, who pioneered integrated healthcare in the UK, who came up with this concept in his clinic. He's got over 30 years of clinical experience. And I never thought I would see a product that had this level of ongoing usage and positive effect on people that also have no meditation experience and just feeling anxious, overwhelmed, and need a way to regulate the nervous system. So we all need a way to regulate the nervous system. Yeah. And it doesn't matter if it's Sensate or whatever else. I couldn't be more happier if we got to a point where Sensate is no longer needed. I think it will probably take 500 years.
Yeah, I agree.
In the current phase. But it is so important for our general health. And it's not actually just about feeling stressed or anxious, that it's an uncomfortable feeling and we might snap at people around us or make stupid decisions. But when we activate the stress response, we suppress immune system, digestive system, reproductive systems, also connection to prefrontal cortex. So, you know, it really has a lot of very negative effects on our physical health. It's now clinically proven that, you know, poor sleep and chronic stress directly leads to some of the most serious long-term disease like dementia, type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular issues. So it is just extremely important. I think it's fantastic that we've kind of established that we need to have gut health, but guess what? Yeah. Activating the stress response suppresses the connection, like the digestive functions. So it's all related, and it's very hard to have a healthy system overall if you don't have a good vagal nerve tone or like a healthy nervous system. So yeah, and what we find is that it's just like a lot of people need an easy way to relax, and that they find Sensate the easiest way to get into a relaxed state, which is very promising.
Oh, so grateful that you guys are working on this. I mean, I you already know this, but I work with a lot of corporate teams and different like public speaking on mental fitness. And because of that, I'm often running them through assessments and have data just showing that, you know, probably this has probably been higher now, but on average, 60 to 67% of teams are not operating at, you know, optimal mental conditions. Like they're max stress. I think there's global data too, showing that 60% of the global workforce shows up at work stressed daily. I mean, forget
76% of American adults report chronic stress.
That's like wild. Forget. Right. I mean, there's performance things, there's productivity, there's all of that. But I just think as humans, we deserve to feel good more days than not. And there's no way you can show up like that if we're all stressed all the time. And we're just we're at this point where I don't think we can't not do something, right? Like if we just stay on autopilot, we know what's going to happen. There's social media, there's all the fear-based headlines in the news. And so like, we just can't, we're not biologically wired to handle present day life. So like, mm-hmm. we need these tools, right? And we, it's not what I love about it. Like, sure. I mean, and you spoke about the benefits of, you know, going on a 7 or 11 day silent retreat kind of thing. I mean, obviously very helpful.
I haven't done that for years, by the way, sure. since I started with this company.
Sure. But I mean, my point is it doesn't, like, mm-hmm. there are so many things we can do that are mm-hmm. so accessible, and Sensate is yep. one of those, but there's so, and we've talked about so many practices, like it doesn't have to be like this.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, like, that's where, again, like, there's so many different practices, just find something. And, yeah. and then there's resources for courses. Like, for example, there's a difference for me doing a Sensate session or meditating. If my mind is really spinning and I have a lot going on in my mind and I actually need to regulate my nervous system, then meditation will have the benefits of the practice of coming back and coming back and coming back and strengthening the muscle. But I'm not yeah. necessarily going to record a deep relaxation on my Oura Ring. Whereas I do a Sensate session, I will get that nervous system recharged. I could meditate at the same time if I yeah. wanted to. So it's also like, what do we need at different points? But I do think that there's such a large percentage of the population that needs something, about 25% of our users as well. Use it for sleep. And, you know, in terms of what you're talking about with, you know, we need this. One thing that is extremely important for me personally is this kind of like humanity, where are we going? Because there are two aspects. One is the triggers yeah. and one is our vagal nerve tone. Like, a vagus nerve is literally what determines our stress resilience. So okay. We also, like, given that there are so many triggering events, we can both kind of self-manage by reducing our addiction to social media or not listen to so many news, but we also don't need people that are just completely switched off and not engaging in society and like blocking off, you know, wars or whatever else is going on. Yeah. We actually need more people with strong stress resiliency. Those are the leaders. Like, yeah. imagine being a leader of a country and needing to decide whether to press the nuclear button or not. You know, like yeah. that, you don't want that person to have poor stress management and just get erratic yeah. and act out of survival modes. I'm very passionate about the fact that we need more leaders that have the resilience to deal with the challenging issues that we face as a collective.
Yeah. So then for something like that, is it, because the other thing I'm hearing you speak about that or theme in the conversation is just around having multiple practices that, you know, work well for you, of course. And like, to me, I call this a mental fitness plan. It's like, we have a strategy to operate our companies, but most of us don't have a strategy for our mind, right? So that when you're in a scenario, like you're saying, like, okay, I need a little bit of this, then you're like, oh, well, these two or three practices I know will give me that. So, but you have to go through the process of identifying, okay, well, here's what works for me. Here's what I'd like to try and so forth. And then integrate it into your routine, right? Or your regular workday, I guess you can say.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm very happy that my partner, Jeff, is very routine oriented.
Okay.
And I am much more, like, he brings more routine, I bring more novelty and more variety. So, and because that has been, I'm very curious about things. I study a lot and I'm like always like, what's new, what's happening? But then obviously the real benefits come from routine. I mean, if you want to have a real change, the daily meditation, it was going to make more difference than doing this super challenging 10-day meditation where you meditate 9 hours a day, which I did 3 times. So I totally agree with that routine. And that has been more of a challenge for me. I think there is also a interesting aspect of why do we think that we need something? And shifting mm-hmm. from, I should meditate because there's something wrong with me, or I should meditate because I love myself. And that goes for good. Every behavioral change, right? Like, if we want to like, oh, I'm not going to eat ice cream because I'm fat, or I'm not going to eat ice cream because I love myself and care about my body, that makes the whole difference. So also that like slight hardness and just softening that, I feel like I have more of a desire. So sometimes what happens now that didn't happen 10 years ago was, I was like, oh, I have 12 minutes. I'm going to meditate. Like that yeah. kind of actual desire that has come with a number of other practices. So yeah. I do look at, we are complex beings. And that's why for me personally, combining, you know, if it's IFS and journaling and Kabbalah and meditation has worked really well for me. But I also appreciate that there are benefits of going deep dive on one thing as well.
Yeah. How it's just, you know, just knowing the environment that you're operating in, and the team is obviously in a, you know, startup environment and so forth. Like how have you guys, I guess, really lived out these practices? And I think sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's just also acknowledging that, you know, maybe we're not doing so well on that and resetting and so forth. But I guess what's worked really well, whether it's with Sensate or other companies that you've been a part of, that, you know, maybe anyone listening that's running a team or working in an organization can borrow.
Yeah, I think in my previous teams, to be honest, I didn't really dare to go full in many ways. I still felt like I needed to show up to some level of expectations of how a CEO or, you know, some kind of senior manager works. So it was like a little half. But I think I also hadn't fully established what my beliefs around a team and organizations are. I see the Thiel style organizations as very efficient. Again, it's system thinking. An interconnected system is much more intelligent than a hierarchical system. So the ability to distribute both knowledge and authority across an interconnected system is going to operate better than a hierarchical system. So I do see that kind of trend of shift actually in general. Like when we've gone through major shifts of consciousness, we've also shifted how we self-organize. And I definitely see one of that happening. And I was excited when I found the book, Reinventing Organizations, because it kind of put words to my philosophy.
Okay.
But when it comes to the sort of self-management, there is definitely a paradox in, I guess we categorize this early stage now versus startup, but there is a paradox. It isn't for everyone. And I think it's also accepting that, you know, if the pace and the pressure and the uncertainty and the real possibility, like what is 97% of entries don't make it, like that's real. If that is causing your heart rate to go up, you really shouldn't do it like that. Then you're like, we have to understand that it isn't for everyone.
Yeah.
And then it's nothing wrong necessarily with the culture. So I think it's a little bit, you know, sometimes we can take all sorts of crazy business books. It's like, oh, I should be able to just work a few hours a day and, you know, achieve this massive growth. It's like, no, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
The purpose and the mission is definitely fuel for myself and the whole team. I think everyone cares from the bottom of their heart about what we do. And we're helping people all over the world. And we are creating a little bit more peace and calm and consciousness. Every 12 seconds, someone's starting on average Sensei sessions. You know, we're very driven by that. And that changes a lot in terms of burnout. Like if you're working really hard on something and you don't care, that is negative for the nervous system. And then also the fact that we are really a team. So, you know, having looked at a lot of statistics of stress in the workplace, you know, one of the biggest or the biggest, depending on the study, is the direct manager, your direct report. And so the poor management and not being able to communicate and, you know, having responsibilities but not authority and those kind of things are obviously very stressful. And then, you know, things that I think come into the culture is that it isn't just about professional growth. It's also about personal growth. And those go hand in hand. We have a very open conversation about that. And that's where I think, you know, if you want to have that culture and you have some kind of leadership role, you have to lead with example. There has to be a level of boldness of sharing. And like, for example, I have my stretch mode where I'm super pressed on time and I lose all my kind of green people skills. I will literally not say good morning. I'm like, okay, this is what we're doing. Like very executional. And so I can share that. I can just put in Slack, like I'm in stretch mode today. And everyone knows you're going to be like two word answers and it's nothing personal. So just having that growing as a team. Personal development side. And then, you know, small things like we start every all hands, every board meeting with a short meditation or breath work, just to kind of integrate that, normalizing these kind of practices, normalizing that type of self-care and how we feel about things. Also break up rooms and sharing that go a little deeper. So it's hard. I cannot say we're doing it well, but there is a very clear intention and it's a gradual process, right?
Yeah. Well, I just love it because I'm seeing it more and more too with organizations, just incorporating, like you said, check-ins and all hands with some breathing or even just check-ins. Like, how's everyone doing? You know, honestly, you know, one word, what's the check-in kind of thing. And again, it's not, we don't judge, it's just getting that out and collecting some data then for the individual as well. Like, okay, well, if I feel, you know, scattered or overcapacitated, I mean, is there any, can I cut the fuel source to some of that or make some adjustments throughout the day? And sometimes that's all you need, right? But it's just nice to see that it's slowly starting to kind of get into or work its way into culture. I guess my last question for you then is, I mean, there's no doubt the data is not great out there in terms of stress and kind of where we're at as a population when it comes to our minds and so forth. But there's also, of course, and you guys are a part of this in terms of there's a lot of positive, you know, that is seeping out into the world and tools and modalities and so forth. I guess, what are you excited for in the years to come in this space?
I am super excited about the evolution of tools that use different type of frequency, whether it's light or sound. I see a lot of really exciting innovation in that space. And that's one of the kind of major paradigm shifts. I don't think that we actually give music enough credit. I mean, yeah, it's just fascinating what music does to us in terms of shifting our mood or, you know, also impact on memory and all of that. My late grandfather, he had Parkinson, and at an old age, he couldn't walk properly, you know, couldn't eat well, but he could still play the grand piano.
Wow.
So like music just has a does something different to our brain and our system. And, you know, where does cats, you know, cats nine life and cat purr being infrasonic waves, you know, there's some interesting research in general in that space. So I'm super excited about that. On a more general level, I'm very excited about the shift towards precision health. I'm a little concerned about the divide there because obviously we have an incredibly valuable healthcare system for, you know, surgeries and life-saving, you know, elements, and I'm very grateful for all, you know, the doctors and everyone who works in that industry. But at the same time, we do have functional medicine. We do have a lot of things in the biohacker longevity space that now evidently moves the needle and really works. And so I'm excited about that and excited about especially precision health. Yeah. We are such a unique ecosystem. And so really understanding what we need on an individual level, and AI actually fits right in with that. It's a huge enabler for precision health. So yeah, those are some of the things I'm, you know, very passionate about. And just, you know, the fact that we're sitting here having this conversation, like 15 years ago, I could never have imagined, and I would have been mortified by sharing how weird I am, and maybe I should be. But, you know, just these conversations are so much more normal, and that gives me a lot of hope.
You are just the right amount of weird, in my opinion. I love it. This was such a great conversation. Thank you, Anna, for, of course, your time and sharing and being open and honest and so forth. And then, of course, just like you literally following your own practices and being you and being the unique version you are, because then we're getting the benefit of that through, you know, your work and so forth. And that's, you know, that's exponential. So thank you.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me on here and all the wonderful work you're doing.